out. And so that's the monthly Radio Book Club, the fourth Thursday of every month, 9 o'clock.
KJNU new listeners are going to miss you. We all appreciate your service to the community. Thank you so much for letting us wake up to your voice all these years. It's been a comfort to know I can turn to 88.5 FM and listen to the news and that Maeve Conran will be delivering it. So thank you again so much and best of luck to you. And as we transition here at KGNU in our news department, I'll be with you on Mondays and Fridays. And our former news director, as well as our former general manager, Sam Fuqua, will be here Tuesday through Thursday. Stay tuned for a new commentary with Jim Hightower.
This program is made possible by you, the KGNU listener member, and by Fisk Planetarium on the CU Boulder campus, providing innovative astronomy, science, and artistic programs since 1975. More information at colorado.edu/fisk or by calling 303-492-5002.
Support comes from the Boulder Library Foundation and Boulder Public Library, providing a community forum to talk about race as part of Boulder Public Library's One Book, One Boulder series, featuring Ijeoma Aluo discussing her book, So You Want to Talk About Race, on Thursday, November 5th at 7 p.m. boulderlibrary.org.
There's a mournful Peggy Lee song that asks the existential question, is that all there is? Some progressives are asking that when looking at whether to vote this year, Biden or Trump. Is that all there is? No, just scroll down the ballot in most voting districts and you'll find a choice of solid progressive contenders in congressional, state, and local races for grassroots offices. But wait, scroll a bit lower and you're likely to discover a process of direct democracy, allowing ordinary people, you and me, to make our own policies and laws, rather than hoping that legislators and lobbyists will do right by us. These are ballot initiatives, policy ideas and procedural changes that are put directly to voters in a state, county, or city. Most are put on the ballot by groups that get enough voters to sign petitions demanding that a particular proposal be listed. It's not an easy process, but it has become a more common legislative tool, as shown by the number and variety of propositions on Tuesday's ballots. Just counting statewide initiatives, voters in 32 states will be making their will known on 120 ideas. They include such solidly progressive actions as Arizona's proposal to raise taxes slightly on the super-rich to cover an overdue raise in pay for school teachers. They also include such blatantly regressive schemes as the attempt in California by Uber, Lyft, and other gig giants to strip health care from their low-wage workers. This is Jim Hightower saying, especially prominent in this year of pandemic disease, mass job losses, and ever-spreading inequality, are citizen initiatives to start restoring worker rights and income. These illustrate the importance of direct ballot lawmaking. When public officials and corporate hierarchies snub people's needs or carelessly harm them, the initiative is a democratic path for asserting the people's will.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit hightowerlowdown.org.
And it's 8:36. You're listening to KGNU. Time now for A Public Affair.
Good morning. This is A Public Affair. And my name is Frank Dubofsky, and my guest this morning is Lori Preston, who's the director of the Boulder Museum on Broadway in Boulder. Good morning, Lori.
Good morning, Frank. Thanks so much for inviting the Museum of Boulder to this show. We appreciate it greatly.
Tell us, what is the Museum of Boulder? How would you describe it?
I would say, I love the quote, actually, of a recent and former board member who sent this to me. She said, you know, it's become a civic cathedral of sorts. And I actually like that because we really are no longer just a museum that houses a bunch of old artifacts, but instead we have moved in this vibrant spot on the corner of Pine and Broadway to really merge a number of things. One, a place where we can educate. So we have programming that comes through of schools. It's a place where we can communicate with community members, bring guest authors in or highlight life studies that are going on at the university, et cetera. So that community programming piece. And then the other part of us is, to tell the history of Boulder in a very innovative way and through a very interactive way. We have an exhibit specific to that. So that element of us is there. But I think the civic cathedral part now is that we've become this community resource. So a place where, artists can gather, where you can have a wedding or where somebody can have a memorial service, et cetera. So it's really become a hub of activity beyond just collecting the history piece.
Okay. Before we get into that, maybe we could find out a little bit about you. What is exactly is your position there?
I am the executive director.
Okay. And maybe you could give the listening audience an idea of what type of things that are presently being displayed, if they were interested in coming by.
Sure.
What kinds of things would they expect to see and to learn from?
Exactly. So think of this building that a lot of people may recall as the Masonic Lodge.
It's on Broadway and what's the cross street?
On Pine and Broadway. So catty corner to the Hotel Boulderado. Really, really close within steps. We've counted them. It's only 500 steps from the visitor kiosk of Pearl Street. So we're imagine 4 floors because we have a lower gallery that's really kind of down in our garden level. And imagine in that floor, that lower level is a space that's focused on our children of all ages, we'll call it, because we have seen adults in there interacting. And we have a space that's called Playzeum. And it was created by 9 different entities in Boulder during the quarantine time, if you can believe that. We had it on the books to get it going and set up and opening in May.
What does Playzeum mean in this case?
Right. It's actually a place to create and to explore
sort
and to
like
ask
Legos.
Questions. Well, it's like giant Legos. Really, truly. So if you go in, it really is like there's one whole section that's all about building and another section that has a space to read and another one where you look up and the ceiling is crocheted in rainbow colors because so it's just it's inviting exploration. It's a safe, large space for families to plop and let their children play. We've actually given some opportunities for pods where people can bring just their pod of learners into that space and feel really good about it being clean and sanitized, et cetera, during this time. So that's
Let me interrupt for a minute. What's your primary exhibit that you have right now? If somebody wanted to go there because they wanted to get out of the freezing weather, and what are you showing now?
We have 2 that are super, it's hard for me to pick the one. Okay, so one I would tell you about is our Boulder Experience Gallery. That's our showcase gallery that is always present. So it's our permanent gallery. And in that is high tech. In that is a story of athletes in Boulder, of entrepreneurs in Boulder, of people who have brought us into the natural food industry, those who have science contributions from Scott Carpenter to a recent display of a 9-year-old who created a device to distribute medicine, orally, which is an incredible story of a 9-year-old in Boulder. That exhibit just won actually a national award that we're super proud of. The other I would tell you that actually opens up October 30th, it's called Drawing Parallels, Community Art and Artifacts from 2020. Basically, it's saying, hey, all through 2020, we've had this weird mix of chaos, and then we've had this weird mix of quiet, right, with the quarantine. And so this Drawing Parallels steps back in Boulder's history, back to 1918 and the Spanish flu. And it has this mix from 1918, 1940s, 1960s, 1980s to say how there's this parallel of things that have happened that have been either of incredible social injustice to a pandemic or a health issue that's really big.
And so, speaking of health issues, what about the present pandemic? Is that a problem for the museum?
Well, and let me tell you, related to that particular exhibit, we are actually highlighting Boulder community health through this exhibit because we wanted to seize the moment and capture people's stories and feelings right now. So there is display of that in the exhibit. But what you're asking is, how would somebody feel if they came into the museum? And we are working extremely diligently to align ourselves always with state and local guidelines. We look at capacity numbers. We limit the number of people in a gallery. We require masks at all times. We provide coverings for hands and for fingers if they're using interactives. We have a sanitation plan as people go through. And the beauty, you know, is these four floors of galleries. So we really can feel open space, et cetera, including our rooftop, which
your rooftop is used by people for weddings and other such matters, and that's outdoors, so you're even better off in a sense of not having to worry about the virus if you're outdoors on that. And you got great vistas of the city of Boulder thrown
exactly.
in with it.
Exactly. It's such an incredible, it's really, I would say, one of Boulder's prettiest views for sure. And it's such a pleasure to stand up there, look out, see, you know, Colorado University, look another direction and see the mountains and Flatirons and the other directions and see some of the churches that are in the heart of downtown, et cetera. It's a great space. And yes, it's helped us. It's probably through the pandemic that we've made more partnerships with entities like, you know, the Boulder Philharmonic or the Boulder's Opera. Downtown Boulder did their Bands Above the Brick concerts up there. It's been a real lively spot that has actually saved some individual artists. It's really something we're proud of, and we're pleased to have said that, you know, they've been able to function, you know, during these months because they've had their dance classes and their yoga classes, et cetera, up there on our rooftop.
Lori, tell us, what is your job entail as the executive director? What do you do?
You know, I get the privilege of working with a really powerfully brilliant staff. And it's a small staff, a staff that is mixed of part-time and full-time and only equal to 8 people. And so with that is my job to manage and to help oversee and support them in their expertise areas. So we have individuals who work with education only, and those who work with just community programming, and those who work with just our events, and those who work with our collection. You know, we have a collection of 44,000 artifacts that are offsite. We don't have all those. There's no way we could showcase all of them. And so it's my job to work with the staff. It's also my job to have a relationship with our very engaged board of trustees who give and donate their time to the overall financial health and stability of the museum. I'm responsible for overseeing that. They also entrust me to make sure that our strategic vision is online and on course and constantly measured and evaluated to see if we're where we need to be in terms of the overall, you know, mission of the museum. And
let me interject for a second. Just to remind the listeners that this is a public affair. My name is Frank Dubofsky, and my guest is Lori Preston, who's the director of the Boulder Museum on Broadway and Spruce. That's who I'm talking to right now. But you've been hit pretty hard, like most companies or stores or places in Boulder, by virtue of the pandemic. Tell us how you guys are trying to survive that and deal with it.
Yeah, and I'm going to be pretty candid with that. I think it's super important to know that, and I could really speak to all arts and cultural organizations, it's been tough and some won't survive. As a matter of fact, they think about 30% of the museums across the United States will not survive. We are working as hard as we can to make that not be the case for us. We have lost upwards of $85,000 to $90,000 per month that we've been out. And that's because we don't have our programs. We don't have the relationships with the schools. We don't have that piece that was coming in. And also because memberships even dropped. Understandably, people have been like, you know, I'm not going to renew because I may not go in there during these months of quarantine.
People are pulling in their belts.
Exactly. And understandably, or they're shifting to, you know, what can they give to human impact wise? And so that's why we're really trying to get creative on who we can partner with and who we can get our messaging out to say, keep this 76-year-old organization that's very vibrant. You know, we have many more stories to tell. We have things to bring up and correct from the past.
Well, I've been to your place several times, and it's just a wonderful exhibit of Boulder history and in a broader sense, a lot of other aspects of what Boulder's about. If parents wanted to go with their kids, they could learn more about Boulder history in Colorado in that place probably than any other place in the state. So it really, I think you guys have done a great job in telling this story.
Thank you. We hope.
What do you have
that's
coming up or just going on right now online that people who would be interested in coming in the next couple of weeks? And what does it cost and where do they park and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So what's great about where we park is that we do have a parking lot of about 12 spaces. That's a little bit north of the museum itself. You enter it on Pine because we're on the corner of Broadway and Pine, and you enter the parking lot there and it's free. So it's unique to have a free parking spot downtown. We are $10 for adults and $8 for students and seniors. And then children under 5 are free. So we have also, that's for admission, but we also have those who make a choice to support us, which we greatly appreciate, on an annual basis. So for example, a family membership is $100. And you can join as a family and come in as many times as you wish and then gain a few other benefits, etc. So, yeah. And right now, Drawing Parallels, another tiny exhibit called Live from Boulder that features some of the live music up on the hill. You know, like that you can sit in a chair and watch a concert of Grateful Dead. So we're proud of that fun little pop-up exhibit that's happening right now. And even outside, we're featuring an artist called Angie Ng. And she's created some things where people can walk outside the museum, never even come in our doors, never pay a dime, and experience some stories of civil unrest across some decades by using a QR piece on your phone. So we're really, really proud of that one right now. And an upcoming partnership that we're doing with Historic Boulder. Everybody knows that, you know, for the last 35 years, Historic Boulder has had a holiday home tour, and we can't go inside homes this year. So we've partnered with them to do this virtual drive by and walk the neighborhood from basically Pearl Street to Maxwell and see these incredibly decorated homes during the holidays. So that's kind of a fun upcoming one, December 12th and 13th, that we want to say we're proud to work with Historic Boulder.
Okay. Again, this is a public affair. My name is Frank Dubofsky, and my guest is Laurie Preston, who is the director of the Boulder Museum at Broadway and Spruce. And you also have some long-term plans about what you're going to bring in and demonstrate. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
We sure do. We're really proud that in February, it was like November to February, right before we all left, you know, in March for a few months, we started a strategic planning process with Brent Glass, which he is the director emeritus out of the Smithsonian. And Brent led us through with our board some strategic planning and visioning for the future. And along with, you know, preserving our collections and along with financial health and stability, one of the things we said is we really want to look at ourselves and ways in which we can transform ourselves into a community resource. And a grant opportunity just popped up just recently. And it's through the IMLS, so the International Museum and Library Associations, that target libraries and museums to help fund them. And we're writing a grant. We're hopeful for it. It would bring in the ability for us to pay the partners that we collaborate with. And we have chosen to go this route. We've chosen to call it a vanishing history and to focus on the Black community of Boulder and or the lack of the Black community in Boulder. You know, U.S. News and World Report just said that Boulder is one of the happiest places in the United States.
Well, I mean, they said we were the best number one city in the United States to live in.
So exactly.
That's a pretty good kudo.
It is a good kudo, but it also makes us at this moment really need to reflect on the percentage of people of color who live in our community. And Blacks in particular, there is less than 1% in Boulder. And in the state of Colorado, only 4.6%. And so our hope with this grant, if we're able to get this, we have partnered with Adrian Miller, who is a powerful author, who is from the Denver area, a Black gentleman who was actually on the staff, the administrative staff of Clinton, President Clinton, when he was in office. And Adrian's writing a book about Black history in Colorado, particularly the people, the stories, et cetera, because there is not enough of that information out there. And so Adrian has committed his research. Our grant would help provide funding for some of that research. And then we've also gained just this week a commitment verbally from the local NAACP, the state level NAACP, Denver Public Libraries, who's going to partner with us on this, as well as Katrina Miller, who is an incredible videographer in Boulder, and a number of others. Boulder Valley School District has agreed as well to work with us. So we are so hopeful, you know, for a grant like this. If we get it, it's $250,000, not in our pockets, but in those we partner with. But it also has to be matched by the community. So we would have a number of like 4 years to match that $250,000. So hopeful, fingers crossed. It's an important message. And then we also have to consider how can we get that out even if we don't get the grant, because that's important and aligned with our mission.
Now, if some listeners now say, listen, I'd like to look at that museum. And being a person who's been in it several times, it's a remarkably nice building that's been redone, I'm sure, since its prior occupant was there, and it's in great shape. I think Mr. Thibault played an important role in all of this, as well as several other people. But tell us what they could expect if they showed up in the next week or two that might attract some parents who want to get their kids out. I mean, the problem is kids are not really in school or haven't been in school in many ways. This is, in its own way, a very concentrated learning process, if you want to take it that way, which I think you should.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you asked, what would it look like if you walked in? So right now we're averaging, so imagine a day from 9 to 5. We're actually open one evening a week, which is new. On Wednesdays, we're open from 9 until 8. But you would walk into our very open and spacious lobby. I would say every space that we have feels spacious. It has high, they have high ceilings and lots of room. And so because we have the 4 floors, that also gives distance between people. So they come in, we have a guest services representative, only one, who's at the front, plexiglass is in front of that individual. And then we have a way for them to purchase by swiping their own card. There never has to be an exchange of money, et cetera. In that space is a very leaned up gift shop. A lot of people don't know that we have a gift shop and that we have the opportunity right now to even purchase and wrap yourself, you know, wrap your own gift on the spot. And then on that same floor is this big open drawing parallels exhibit, the one that has the pandemic mixed with social unrest. It is extremely spacious. Capacity wise, we limit. If the state were to show those guidelines right now and local, we could have up to 40 in that space if we chose to. Right now, we look at around 10, and then we ask people to move to another space of the museum and then return back to it if they want to.
It's very educationally driven, right?
Very much.
The idea is to people to learn about the history of Boulder in either a geological sense or in a pandemic sense, or whatever is on the table. And you can learn a lot there in a short period of time.
I'm telling you,
kids.
I think one of the most powerful pieces is this one theater situation that we have where we collaborated with the Arapaho tribes who are now at the Wind River Reservation in Wyoming. Rather than have artifacts that are from the indigenous, we created a theater experience, again, very open, very spacious, where those who are in there can interact and actually hear the voices of current indigenous tribes. So there's that element too, that's really at the core of you know, why we're even on this land, right? And that story is important for us to
tell. So Boulder has its own version, although much smaller, of the Smithsonian. So
exactly.
If you want to go to the Boulder Smithsonian, go to where you are.
Aw, that's sweet.
And I would attest, I've been there several times. I learn a lot each time I go.
Yeah, it's so fun to look up and see, you know, bicycles of people, you know, that have competed in the Olympics, or, you know, see the jersey of someone worn, you know, like by Frank Shorter, or the shoes of Colleen Cannon, you know. So we have that mix of the rock climbing piece, including not just seeing an artifact, but also having like a scenario of what would happen if you had to, you know, if someone fell and you were in Boulder Canyon, what would you do? And it gives all these opportunities for you, you know, sitting there to engage with, I think I would try this, or I would reach out to this entity, or I would use this tool to help, or whatever. It's pretty in-depth that way, as well as Google Garage. Google, you know, a great partner here in Boulder, provided a space where people of all ages can tinker. And so we have a real safe space where we have...
Tinker in a garage-like setting?
Yeah, it's super cool.
Build cars, small cars?
They could. And interact with things like, everybody knows, you know, BB-8 of Star Wars, for example. Well, they may not realize that the Sphero was a Boulder creation. That we wouldn't have BB-8 if it weren't for Boulder. And so Sphero has these really cool interactives, you know, like a ring that you put on your finger, and that ring, if you touch a color, makes a musical note. And so in that Google Garage, you can take a magic marker, draw out a bunch of different colors, put on one of these rings, and play a song that you've just created out of color. And that's because of, you know, genius minds like Brackets, which is Boulder based. So like you mentioned Lego earlier, the Boulder Lego is Brackets. And we have tons of Brackets for people to build and create, you know, structures in there, in that space.
Lori, I'm going to have to interrupt here because I think we're getting down to the wire. This is a public affair. I'm Frank Dubofsky. Lori Preston is our guest today, and she's been talking about the Boulder Museum, which I believe is quite a place to visit and a great place for kids and parents to learn together.
I would just say thank you so much. We parallel with you guys in terms of a mission of being a voice to the community, and we just hope we can continue to be that voice and collector of treasures and stories, etc. So thank you for letting us have this time with you.
And you've been listening to A Public Affair with Frank Dubofsky. It's 9:04, and you are listening to all of that on KGNU. Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins coming up next, Counterspin. And then Doug Gertner will be here this morning for the Morning Sound Alternative. Lots going on this day before the monumental election day. Stay tuned to 88.5 FM KGNU.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, as we record on October 29th, the Supreme Court has ruled that Wisconsin doesn't need to count mail-in ballots that arrive after